Welcome to Photography Insights, and I'm your host, Andrew Walmsley. This is the show that interviews people from around the photography world. Catherine Reichert is today's guest, all the way from New Jersey, New York. Catherine's work is all about a combination of alternative processes, painting, intaglio printing. We came across her work through the wonderful Jason Lazarus from episode 139. I really like Kat's projects, including those of How My Son Sees It, Genetically Modified, and Hypnagogia. There are fun works for you all to look at. So in this one, we discuss buying toys, working with flash and long exposure, being a student, creating work, solar plates, sleep states, self-portraiture, undiagnosed health, and a Hasselblad. And I do urge you to obviously check out the links which go to Kat's Instagram and website. I have to say, Kat was a very fun guest. We've got on so well, and we've actually become friends. And we've been working on a few ideas together, and one of these has resulted in a little project we've started together. Now you can't sign up for this one; it chooses you. So keep watching Instagram for news of this. Just to remind everyone, there is my donation page on Ko-fi, which is on the homepage of my website. Obviously, all donations mean an incredible amount to me. And in actual fact, the first lot of donations I've put towards my cyanotype chemicals and paper. So do watch out on social media for the results of that. Obviously, it'll take a few weeks to produce anything decent, but I've put the first ones out there just to show you that it is possible. But there's lots to learn, like anything in photography. Please do remember the friends of the show, Chroma Camera, Film Dev, and Static Age. And in other news, I'm really proud to say, after listening to all these artists, I've actually come up with a personal project. So what I've done is put together another website, but this is totally dedicated just to my photography. It's clean and simple site, no blogging, no podcasting. It's just my art and experiments. Only a few friends have seen this. This project is deeply personal. Most images will have some sort of a story or meaning to them. And it's not just about cameras, so I hope you do check this one out. Anyway, I hope you find time to check that out. The link is in the show notes. To find it, it's just awalmsley.art. So, let's play the music and await our lovely guest, Kat. Welcome to the show, Kat. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
No problem. It's been great to have you. We've actually just been chatting so long, we forgot to start recording, and Kat hasn't got so long. So please bear with us, everyone.
Just rush through this real quick.
We'll
All
just
this
rush through.
boiling
Yeah.
boil it
What you've all missed is we've actually just invented a new form of photography.
down.
It's top secret. We're going to be trademarking it and testing, aren't we?
And we'll let you know what that is as soon as it does come out. Just know that it involves lots of little shoes and possibly PETA
And the dark room.
and the dark room
Yeah.
because
We can give
photography.
them that, can't we? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we'll just dangle that out there. It'll be like a little teaser.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So it's been great chatting with you. Obviously you were recommended by the lovely Jason, which was, a fabulous interview.
Yes, I listened to it and it definitely brought back memories of the classroom and everything. It was, good to hear him talking about all his photography stuff again. He's an excellent teacher. Really can't say enough good things about him.
No, that's good. And obviously, you now moved from Alaska to New Jersey. And I have to say, some of these projects are so different. It's great to see such different work again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I think if we get everyone to start on this one, I think the How My Son Sees It. I think these
Right.
are unusual animal shots as well.
Well, I actually started doing those as one of as Jason's student in a beginning photography course. Yeah, it was one of our first assignments. He was explaining to us the concept of depth of field and depth of field. So I was asking him, does this work on miniatures? Does it have to be a large scale? Just kind of a million and one questions. And he's like, yes, go experiment. So one of the first things I did, it was at night. We had just put my son down. He was for bed. It was like he was 1.5 years old, roughly about then. And he had all these toy animals laying out, and he gets very lost in his thoughts. He's got a very active imagination. He's always playing with them, and it looks like he gets so intense and into these little worlds. So I was like, picking up his stuff, putting him away, and I'm like, I bet I could experiment with this and, work on something for my assignment, do something kind of cool. So I set it up just on a little piece of like scrapbook paper that I had lying around. I think there's a jar of water behind it with one of those submersible lights. And as I started just kind of experimenting with the different depth of field, then I got kind of more into it. I'm like, what happens if I throw some ice cubes on there? It's going to look like ice. Oh, I'm going to build this guy a whole scene. Let me put some flour down. It's going to look like snow. And then, that's kind of where the whole thing snowballed from. Yeah. So then after that, I started kind of methodically going through. And then it got to the point where it was really just a problem. It became a problem. We would go out to the craft store, and I'm like, oh, he doesn't have a an owl. I should get him an owl. But really, I would hold on to it for a month so I could take a picture of it and then just give it to him when I was done. So yeah, I bought way more toys than I think I probably should have. But he did get them in the end, so it's fine.
God, that's cool. So it's sort of macro.
Yeah, so it was pretty close up. I mean, maybe I had the camera set up. I mean, it was all done pretty much on the floor. It was a pretty B movie, low budget setup. I used a bag of rice to steady the camera because it had to be right on the floor to be sort of eye level with everything. And yeah, it was maybe a foot or so away. And the whole setup itself was really like 1 square foot or so. Like, it was a very small set. Yeah.
So not macro as in the lens, but macro sort of
Like a small contained world getting in there. I guess in that sense, yeah.
That's an interesting sort of take on the macro world. I like that. Because you couldn't
Thank
tell from the
you.
photos. Honestly, I had no idea.
That there are some kind of interesting things about it. As I went down his list of animals, the scenes that I started building for them, they have an element of like, well, yes, this animal is in a desert or this animal is by the ice, but then it starts to take on these little fantastical elements that aren't exactly accurate. Like I have one of penguins, and they're in this beautiful icy looking area, but they're in an ice cave, which isn't really what they're like known for, in that sense. There's a camel in a desert, but it's actually like a camel that you wouldn't find in Egypt. It's I'm going to butcher this name. I think it's a Bactrian camel. Something like that. Either way, it's not one that lives in the desert. But there are things that, when my son plays with him, he sees it, he's like, camel. And this is the environment that, well, I imagine he's imagining, just sort of letting myself get lost in that, child imagination. Like, I don't know, it's kind of fun. It's a nice little escape.
I like that. Yeah, that's really different. And it's nice to do something for your child and something you enjoy doing as well, because obviously you're obviously passionate about
Yeah, and that was years ago. So now he's 7 and he looks at them and he's like, I remember that octopus. Like he gets so excited about them. He's like, oh, my toys.
it. Yeah, it's nice because you'll both probably have that memory as well, and
Yeah.
they're
It's
important things.
it definitely is. It's good to be able to look back on these things with him and I don't know, have something to smile at with them. It's cool. It feels like yesterday for me, but for him, it's got to be forever ago.
I love it. I have occasional strong memories of little bits that we've either photographed together. I've got one of both my daughters in my dark room, and it's actually quite amazing because my listeners already know, but she's scared of the dark.
Oh wow,
So it
such
was
a big for
really,
her.
yeah, and obviously, and she's petrified of spiders.
Oh God, poor thing.
Yeah. So it was, it's not a normal virus. She would never ever come in, and she came in with her, and I made them tell me what happened in the process and that. And they're just sort of shy. You know how kids freeze up. I poured this, and I did that. Not quite themselves as they would be, but
Not as carefree. They're on the spot.
no, now they're used to it, and they're like, "Hey, everybody, yeah, look at me."
I know my daughter, she's six. She walks around with her laptop. They just had the virtual school, so she's pretty much IT herself now. And she walks around with her laptop, like, oh, sorry, everybody. My mom's just cooking, so it's loud in here. I'm like, who are you talking to? She's like, oh, you know, just making videos for the sake of videos. But yeah, I get it.
I love the characters coming out of him because my youngest, so she's 9, and she'll say, I just tell everyone I'm the pretty girl. I'm like, all right, yeah, confident, aren't you? Yeah.
It's good to feel good about yourself.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had that at 9. No.
You got to start arguing back with her. I'm the
I'm
pretty one.
the
Not
no.
me,
I'm the least important. I know that. She's told me who's best, and it's mummy. Yeah.
that.
Mums are always the best. Come on.
Oh, well.
Definitely, yeah. What I really liked. On your image as well. I had a look at this and I was like, right, let me figure this out. So they're genetically modified.
Yes, my genetically modified ones. Those,
Because they're really cool. And I had to zoom in and I'm like, oh my God, I totally get this. This is amazing.
those actually, I like the concept behind those. That was another kind of musing that, I had for a little project I had to do for school. Actually, most of these are began as school projects, and then, later I was able to carry on with the idea once there was more time. But that was for a alternative processes class. So how I made those was, I took a light painted still life photo, so it was just dark, and then I used a flashlight to paint in the spots on the fruit that, I really liked, kind of give it that really dark chiaroscuro look. And then afterwards went into Photoshop and digitally composited pieces of, oh my gosh, I think it was like Nintendo parts or something like that, little like chips or something that were in there. And then, I used all the different Photoshop tools to kind of make it look like, the fruit had been cut open and they were in there. And just kind of with the idea of, nature as it is, and human intervention, and our tendency to love to meddle with things for better, for worse, just that habit that we have. And then taking the idea a step further, I wanted to print them as cyanotypes, one, because it was a requirement for class, and then two, because the idea of using this historical process along with these digitally manipulated photos, I think it was neat to see them come together like that. And then also it worked on the level of having these still lifes, one of the oldest subjects,
Yeah.
Modernized to this idea of genetic modification, which I don't know, it just kind of crossed over on a bunch of levels. So I liked putting those together.
Oh, they look so much fun. And like you say, you've got two so different subjects because who would think of putting chips near food? It's.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a lot of fun to do. I'm sure I'd had a conversation with somebody on it, earlier that week, that day. I don't know. I feel like I'm always having weird conversations with people. But I mean, look at our photography we just invented. But so a lot of those conversations sort of like spark this like, well, I wonder what if. And then, also when I was young, I had that active imagination that, my son's running around with now. That was always something that I was always getting lost in my own thoughts and falling down these little rabbit holes. So that's something that's kind of carried through with me. So I like to explore these different weird ideas.
I think they're really cool. And it's like you are messing with nature's beauty as well. So
yes,
you could have that twist as well.
Yes, there's all kinds of interference.
Yeah, that's really clever.
Even from the
go on.
I was just going to say real quick too, even from the idea of when I'm shooting the original image, like using a flashlight to create how I want the light to fall on it rather than using natural light or the light that exists. It's just one more way of getting your hand in there and manipulating something that's natural.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with you choosing how it wants to look. And just because you're using an old sort of technique, it doesn't matter, does it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I feel like it's kind of silly to say at this point in time that, you know, there is any right or wrong way to do any kind of photographic or artistic technique. I mean, that's how we grow. That's how the field grows. You experiment, you try new things, you know. I feel like rules is should be very subjective. I think it's great to start learning with rules, but then you have to you have to know what you're breaking in the end. Yeah. But helpful guidelines, but I don't believe they should be forever.
No, I agree. Yeah. That's certainly one of the things that I've sort of learned. And I think that was instilled as a digital photographer. And I think that was probably a limitation I put in myself from watching too much YouTube and doing courses and stuff. These are the techniques you need to know. And yeah, I got to the point where I would understand rule of third, especially more than anything. You know, and rule of odds and things like that. But if you're creating art, most of that is largely irrelevant.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think, again, it's a good starting point. But from there, you've got to do something that feels true to you. And I know for me personally, I'm not necessarily a perfect lighting, perfect composition, balanced anything. I'm a mess. So I like my photos to kind of be a mess too. They need to reflect that. Otherwise, it's not really me. It's not mine. I mean, what am I making it for, you know?
But the thing is, though, you are... especially when you're in university, you had to learn this really fast because in essence, you're on a course, you've got a finite amount of time to learn this, become yourself, develop your own style and show who you are. Whereas in the real world, you know, it's taken me, I don't know, 3 years of talking to people to even think about what a project is and write artist statements and start thinking about projects myself. And that's starting.
No, I think there is something to be said for that, though. I mean, since I've been out of school, you know, I've got a million and one different ideas myself, but sitting down and being like, okay, well, how do we start? How do we get the sweatshirt? How do we get it going? It's easily been a year for me for the last couple ones, too. And I think that, I don't know, I think that means you're onto something, though. You really want this to be reflective of you. You want to be making the right choices for you. Yeah. I think that putting that time in beforehand is going to lead to something stronger in the end. It's a good way to spend your time.
Yeah, I agree. And actually watching these images made me think that there's something there for me to do for my project, because I want to do something about my body and how much time I spend on a computer. Right. So the chip idea was great. What I'm thinking is putting a chip on my arm, but I'm not going to double expose it. I'm going to just bleed. It's
just
tough.
Put it there.
Yeah. It's tough. I'll cut myself.
You're a performance artist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking it might work, and then maybe put some numbers that have some meaning to geeks on here. Or I don't know. There's got to be something there. Or maybe when I started in IT or something, I don't know.
You should write all of your titles like in binary or something. That would be cool. I don't really know if you can do that, if that's really a thing, but
yeah,
I think so.
Binary, right? So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be an idea.
Yeah, I think you've got a million and one ways you can go with that. Like, I'm excited to see it. I think you could do something really cool with that. And that's, you know, it's the fun thing about self-portraiture too. You kind of customize it, and everybody's so different that you do something that reflects you. And while, you know, IT and digital and this and that is everywhere, you're going to do something unique that, that, you know, is singular to you. I don't know. There's so many ways you can go with that. I'm excited to see it.
there's so much. I mean, I like playing around with stuff. So I've got a little chipboard, it is, and you connect something called banana clips. They're just little arms like this.
Okay.
And they'll pass the current from the chipboard, and you can play games with it. They're the sort where you only press one button, so it's like jump, jump, jump. But anything that passes electricity, i.e. contains water, will work. So I've taught my kids how to play the game using bananas and fruit.
Cool.
It's a little, so it's a little chipboard. Because you've got the little arms, as long as they connect to either side, the electricity passes through the banana. So you just touch the banana and it creates the current to make the space.
That's really cool.
And
that is really cool.
Yeah, they're so violent with it. The banana goes in the bin.
As kids are, yes.
Yeah. So you try different fruit and you're like, oh, well, an apple can work and an orange can work. And then you can do hold hands, because you do discharge electricity through your arms as well. And so you can see how many people can hold before, your body stops transmitting electricity.
Oh, somebody who hasn't been drinking their water, they're dehydrated.
Or standing water, you could do that, and then it'll carry on.
Right.
and they have done this. It was basically a university in America who invented the thing. It's called a makey. Makey.
You know, I've heard of this too. I feel like we might have done this experiment, the whole holding the hands thing.
That's an old version of it, yeah.
Yeah. Not that old.
I think that was MIT. No, not you mean. This was within, I think they brought it out maybe 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
Okay,
And I kept it, and I've shown schools it, and they're like, wow, it's amazing.
I wonder if you could use that in your self-portrait somehow too, this whole idea of you conducting electricity. Like, can you shock your paper or something like that?
I don't know.
I think it's a neat idea to kind of explore anyway. Add a little bit of, you know.
Because it would need a power source. But then you can
the
use...
Spiders are going to have to hook you up. They're going to have to help out on an extension cord or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like hamsters in the wheel, get them.
Oh, yeah, no, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And, you know, some of the other work I was looking at, I mean, we'll get to the, is it hypnagogia in a minute?
Hypnagogia.
The places we have been. And this looked, again, so different from your other work. And I like the way you put like 2 or 3 versions of the same image.
Yes. So those actually kind of started out, those are a multi-process project as well. So those started out with what I initially thought of at the time as failed landscape photos. You know, I'd go on these walks with friends, these hikes all over the great state of Alaska. And I take these pictures, but, you know, I'd look at them later and I'm like, I don't really feel anything for them. I don't feel any connection. It's just, okay. So what I did later, I held on to them for a long time because I'm a like a digital file hoarder. I would come back to them later and think about, well, what memory do I have associated with that place? Because a lot of my work really revolves around the idea of like the psychological landscape, how your memories affect your perception of a place where you were, or a thing that you had, and how it causes you to see it, remember it, perceive it differently. So, you know, I would think about what was happening on this walk, and I could kind of get that, like conjure up that feeling that I had while I was there, that sort of nostalgia, or maybe I was, you know, in this place while I was having an argument with somebody, or maybe I was thinking about these things going on in the background. And that's really what I remember about it. Not so much the walk or the hike or this and that. So I would come up with these artifacts and I painted them on there in Photoshop. They're digital paintings. Just like adding a layer on top of the photo and using, it's a like one of those pens to just paint it all on there. And, you know, making the artifact itself look older, kind of beaten up, to kind of allude to the fact that, you know, it's something that happened in the past, you know, maybe it's changed a little bit, you know, time does that to our memories. It does that to all sorts of things. So there's that. So I would put them on there in the landscape to be like, this is the sort of memory that I have along with it. And then from there, I use them later, to make prints from in a printmaking class that I was in. I printed them on solar plates, which is a really, really cool thing. And so basically it's just a little steel plate and you put like a little aquatint mesh screen on it. And then you're able, it's got a photo sensitive coating on it, and you're able to put a digital positive on top and transfer that onto the steel plate. And I'm under the impression, I haven't gotten to do photogravure myself, but I'm under the impression it's very similar, except it's much more accessible. There's not as many steps. It's environmentally friendlier. That kind of thing. But you use like a loose oil-based ink, at least is what I used, and use a tarlatan, which is like a cheesecloth, to apply the ink on there and rub it around. So when you see these like swirls on it and the ink, that's actually my marks as I'm rubbing the cloth on it. A lot of times, yeah, a lot of times when you do it, your goal is to get it like a nice uniform. But I actually found, you know, I preferred it with the marks there. It added the whole artist's hand to the thing. You can see my marks on it, which imparts part of the psychological element onto it too. You know, I'm thinking about this experience that I had, or thinking about the thoughts while I had these experiences to kind of, you know, and, you know, the hand's translating that as I'm like inking it. So it's sort of this really, multifaceted project. So yeah, that's what that is.
No, that's really interesting. Because I've never heard of, I mean, obviously I've heard of solar prints. There's a guy over here who does solar cans.
Like the metal cans with the...
Yeah, so like, it's like a beer can in essence with a little hole of paper in. But it's
right. This is something different.
So you get a plate and someone coats it, or they're already pre-coated.
They're already pre-coated. These, I mean, you can get them. I think it's solarplate.com, solarplates.com. You can buy packs of them on there. You can even get them off that website, Dick Blick. They do the art supplies.
Yeah.
You can get them. They come in like a light safe black bag and a box, and you don't expose them. You have to keep them, you know, until you're ready to use them.
Yeah.
All tucked away. But yeah, it's already got that light sensitive coating on it.
So again, it's cameraless stuff.
I mean the image that I used at first, I mean, obviously. But you know, I suppose you could. You expose it under like in a light unit. So you know, I kind of wonder. I never tried doing any kind of like photograms with it or anything like that, but that'd be interesting to try. I bet you could.
What about daylight as well? You know, as in the solar, as in the sun. Is it too fast acting, or?
You know, I'm not really sure. That's an interesting question. I think I'd love to see somebody experiment with that and try it. I think it would be really neat. I know, you know, it's not as sensitive as being in the dark room. It doesn't have to be dark when you get it out. Like when you take it out of the package, if there's a little like light coming in from the window, that's okay. You just turn the overhead lights off. So it's not quite as sensitive. Maybe you'd need to leave it out a little bit longer. I'm not really sure.
Because if you think about it, like black and white paper, for instance, you know, you'd never do it with a light on, but you do lumen prints with it outside in the garden.
Yeah, and I mean that's right on the paper, so I know, you know, the organic material and everything affects the colors it comes out and all that. So I'd be curious to see what it would do on a plate that then has to be inked and printed. I think that could be really interesting.
Maybe we're onto some of that as well.
Yeah, no, that's I like that idea.
Well, that's really cool. You know where you've put it? It's called, is it Intaglio plate?
Oh, Intaglio, yeah.
Intaglio. So is that a brand or is that?
No, Intaglio ink. It's a style of inking in printmaking. You have Intaglio prints. That's where when you put the ink onto the plate itself, the ink goes into the crevices and the cracks. that are created in the play, as opposed to like relief printing, where if you're carving into wood and you roll the ink on, it stays on the parts that you did not carve out. It's sort of the reverse of that.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's just inking. So the light parts on the solar plate, on the print itself, the parts that are darker are the parts of the plate that have been eaten into a little bit.
Touched, yeah.
More. They've been etched. Yeah. Yeah. And then the lighter parts are up towards the top of the plate. They haven't been etched.
So lots of cuts and dints.
Yes. Yeah.
Help in that sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that maybe your idea of then, you know, brushing it can help as well.
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea. You know, I so love this alternative process stuff now. I think it's so fascinating.
It really is. There's so many people out there working on so many great things, like just so different too. Yeah, there's no end to it.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no reason, like you say, that you can't just digitally do something and combine both worlds or, you know, there are some processes that can't be fixed. And it's like, you know, that's where digital can really help, because then you can preserve it online for forever as well, can't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can mix all of these things together. There's a place in the world for all of them. Yeah. And if we, you know, if we have the tools available to, you know, archive things if we want to, then why not, right?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to talk, obviously, hypnagogia. Did I say it right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes. Finally got it. So
oh, you're good.
I've never heard of this. I mean, this is, you know, your exhibition looks great.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. It's been that's been like the kind of the culmination of my undergraduate time at UAF was this big project. And it was, I found things from every class that I took pretty much coming into this project. So yeah, the term hypnagogia itself is that state of consciousness right before you fall asleep. You're not really awake. You're not really asleep. You kind of, you know, you might be starting to doze off. You maybe hear things. They might not be actually there. It's just kind of like your mind acting out, basically. It's kind of like it's a very interesting, albeit poorly understood, state of conscious. Because, I mean, you try to study it, but usually you're there. And when you're there, you have a hard time remembering things. And you can't really remember them accurately. Was this real? Did I imagine this? So it's very hard to get there and retain it. But there are stories of people throughout history using this technique of kind of catching themselves in hypnagogia to further their artistic practices or something. I'm trying to remember who it was. Like, I feel like I want to say it was, who's a writer? It might've been Shakespeare. I could be off, but it's like a, you know, writer from history who would sit in his chair and he would hold a pencil in his hand and he'd start to fall asleep. And when he was at that point, the pencil would fall out of his hand. So it would jog him out of it. And he'd immediately, you know, get his pencil and write down everything he had just thought of. And there are people who've used that. They've composed parts of their symphonies. They've written stories. Some people even use it in, like scientific understandings. Again, it's been a while. I don't want to lead you astray, give you wrong information, but I know there was something where somebody's trying to problem solve, but you know, they keep getting themselves stuck. So the idea is to let go of the constraints of this analytical rational mind and just kind of see what free floats on it and trust your brain to do some thinking for you without any interference and just let it hand you something you may have heard but ignored. So yeah, that's the whole concept behind it. And for me, this has always been a particularly interesting field because since I've been young, I always kind of struggled with sleep. I would get stuck in that place a lot. I'd be falling asleep, but I always had terrible nightmares. And so, you know, before I fell asleep, I would wake myself up and it would always not always, but, you know, I often be in that sort of place where I wake up, I'm like, did I just see that? Did I just hear that? And then during the day, obviously I'm exhausted. So I'm spending the entire day trying not to doze off. And, you know, I've just always had this really weird kind of relationship with what's real, what's not. Is there such a thing? Where is that line actually even drawn? Because there's not a line. So just the idea itself is, I think, just so interesting.
Yeah, it's an amazing topic. But you chose to do this work with like self-portraiture in essence, isn't it?
Yes. So, you know, at the time when I was making these, I was actually having a lot of issues dealing with undiagnosed depression, anxiety, OCD. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was feeling all sorts of ways about all sorts of things, but couldn't really wrap my mind around, you know, what's happening? Why is this happening? Why am I feeling this? I feel crazy. Mm-hmm. So going into the studio and just, you know, I'm not going to make any decisions. This is where I'm putting the light. And like, I don't know, I pick up a piece of fabric and then just move around in front of the camera and see what kind of ink blot is created through that long exposure ghosting effect. And for me, it was kind of cathartic to look at it and try to go from this intuitive creation to this analytical rationalization. What am I looking at? Like, oh, that's interesting. Why do I see that there? It kind of helped me to make peace with it a little bit, you know, for the time being. And then I was working on the project mostly throughout 2017, 2018, and then moved down to Anchorage for a little bit. And then everything kind of came to a head. And, you know, I ended up going into a hospital for a little bit, just like, I can't come to terms with this. I don't really know what to do. And, you know, found it really hard to describe to people what I was feeling, what I was experiencing. But there was a doctor there that I was so lucky. He was an art collector. He was just like, just loved art, everything about it. So I was able to show him these photos and kind of walk through like, hey, I made this, you know, this is what I saw, this is what I felt, and was able to really kind of connect. And from that point, it became easier and easier to talk and learn this language that could help me communicate with other people about it. And since then, it's been amazing. I can connect with other people who are struggling, but maybe can't put it into words themselves, or, you know, just, you know, appreciate the fact that there's, you know, it's something that's a little heady that maybe it's hard to articulate, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, they make such vivid images that are so different, you know, dream-esque sort of thing. And some of them do look like you're merged with other things as well. I mean, the image I've chosen, for instance, what's going on in that one?
Oh, the green one, you mean Mercy? So that one, I actually have it's this green and gold scarf that I was quite partial to, but only ever really got one or two images that I liked with it. You know, the exposure and the amount of movement that would give like a somewhat recognizable, but still vivid image. It changed depending on the color scarf that you would use. All those other things. Some of them absorb the light better than others. But for that, it was, I like this one because, you know, it's almost like you see the hand coming out in the front. It's like extended kind of, you know, much further than a hand really ought to be. It's like a very long hand. But it's sort of this submission, just sort of saying like, okay, I know, but like, I need help. Just give me help. Just asking for something, just reaching out for it. And I really like that. And, you know, the color with it and everything is sort of this, to me, green is this color that sort of signifies like a return to self. You know, it was always my favorite color when I was younger. I always loved the forest and the woods and all of that. And so to me, it's very comforting. So, yeah.
It's lovely. Yeah. It's a nice color. It really suits the image. I think, you know, the darkness of the black and is it browns or?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably from my hair too. It's really just me and the fabric in most of them. There are some that I have like props, but it's like a bunch of flowers or something like that. There's really not much else beyond that.
No, it's lovely. So is this something you think you'll probably continue and be like a big body of work for you?
So it's right now as it is, it's a pretty decent sized body, but I think I'm ready to put this one to the side, and I'm working on a follow-up piece to it.
Okay.
So in that one, I kind of, towards the end of that one, I'm alluding to these sessions that I was doing with this doctor where we kind of go through hypnosis and things like that, kind of trying to use visualization to sort of, you know, pick out these problems, work through like, what am I feeling? What am I seeing and thinking? And, you know, I've taken some of the tips that she's taught me to kind of use white noise machines at home and kind of, you know, build this personal space and kind of observe from there, you know, observe this interior landscape. And so I'm working on another project that's going to be more involved with that. It's going to be a little bit more solid. And for that, I'm actually, you know, you mentioned earlier about using a Hasselblad, like, am I going to be, you know, just mostly sticking with that for, you know, pleasure? Or do I have something like that? I actually want to be using that for this next thing. And I'm going to be incorporating parts of those journals, basically those sessions, those white noise sessions in there to kind of create imagery to go with it, to, you know, tell the story.
Oh, okay. That's nice that it's, you know, a follow on in that sense as well, because it, you know, it's part of you, isn't it? And things you've gone through.
Yeah, it's very personal. It was very tough to put out there at first, but, you know, I kept thinking if I had, I got a lot of courage from photographers who put things out there that were personal, who maybe talked about their struggles with sleep or with, you know, mental health or things like that. And I remember I was so appreciative of that. I didn't feel alone. And I'm like, you know what? One more voice couldn't hurt. You know, maybe that's what somebody else needs. Because, you know, it's not as uncommon as you think. And
we're frail, aren't we? All of us.
We are. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I think it's been the same for me as well. I think I'm growing from talking to others and realizing, you know, projects about yourself are just as important and showing who you are. Would you want to tell all our lovely listeners where they can check out your work then, Kat?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is www.katherinereichert.com. Reichert is R-E-I. There's another artist, I think she makes jewelry, that's R-I-E. I get messages for her, and I like to imagine she gets messages for me sometimes. So just double check that, R-E-I. And then on Instagram, it's at K-S Reichert. Yeah, and then I have links to various things like a Lomography page and stuff from there. But those are the two that I'm on the most. So come and visit me. Drop me a message. I'd love to talk to you.
There we go. Thank you for that. And obviously, you know, my last question is going to be this pay it forward. Have you got a finite answer for me then?
So is it just, do I just pick one person? Or
well, like most people just give me a list in the end. But if you've got a couple of people or whatever, I'm open to any suggestions.
Yes, so I do have a couple of names. Get out my piece of paper.
She's got 10 sheets, everybody, honestly.
I wrote a report. So just some people that I think are really interesting to check out that are doing all kinds of different things. First person I have to mention is my photography school buddy, Sarah Manriquez. We've been in school since our beginning class together, and she's doing some fascinating work. She's based in Fairbanks, Alaska, and she's doing some social awareness series on being homeless in Alaska, which I think has its, you know, definitely its own interesting set of problems. And she's partnered with a group called Through Our Eyes, which is a program that, you know, recruits some of the homeless people from around the area. And, you know, they get disposable cameras, and they take them out and they take pictures of what it's like in their community throughout their day, and then bring them back. And there's this big show. And then, you know, obviously there's more to it than that, but just bare bones, that's what it is. So she's been working on that. You can check out her website, sarahmanriquez.com, and learn more about that. It's very interesting and very eye opening. Another person that I wanted to bring up was another Alaskan photographer that, you know, I never got to meet him myself, unfortunately. He was down in Anchorage, but his name's Cody Swanson. You can find him on Instagram at Mr. Cody Swanson, M-I-S-T-E-R. And he does some really cool stuff also with sleep disorders and that whole kind of thing. He works with a lot of alternative processes, tintypes. Ooh. He has a pinhole camera that's built like a head. Oh, it's fascinating. So his work is really unique and worth checking out for sure. Another Alaska one that's good to check out is Baxter Bond. He's on Instagram at Bax.bphoto. And he is, he does a lot of work with the Alaska landscape too, but he infuses it with, you know, his knowledge of the indigenous lands and cultures and stuff. He's part of the Yupik tribe there. And so it's really neat having another viewpoint on it that we don't really get to see all that often.
Yeah.
And then I swear I'm almost done. So another one, I've been getting big into Lomography lately, which is this film movement where it's kind of like, have fun with it, you know, experiment. Yeah. Yulia Adamova, she is on Instagram at Yulia, Y-U-L-I-I-A underscore Adamova, A-D-A-M-O-V-A. And she does just all kinds of really cool stuff, film soup, double exposures, film swaps, just everything, anything there, you can like find it on there. She does amazing work. And I'll stop there.
Yeah.
But I may email you more.
Okay. No, that's cool.
I'm very excited about it. Because there's more, but.
No, that's cool. And it's nice because it's nice to have artists that you know about from your area. I think that makes it special.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of these people, one day I want to meet them in real life. But for now, I'm just kind of like an Instagram lurker and I just like their photos and to try to support that way.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's how I started a couple through Instagram. A great way of meeting people.
Oh, yeah, fantastic platform. I love it.
Yeah, it's great for that. Yeah. I'm quite lucky now. I get a lot of recommends, so it's not so bad. But it's nice to see the work, which is cool. So all I have to say is thank you so much, Kat. It's been great talking to you, and I'm sorry we had to rush with your time restraint there.
I really enjoyed our scheming and our planning, and thank you so much for taking the time and talking to me. I really enjoyed it.
No, not a problem at all. You take care, and I'm sure we will speak again soon.
Absolutely. All right, you take care. Enjoy your evening.
Yeah, right. Is that all right? Great stuff. Right, I will leave you to it. Yeah, send anything over, and I'll take a look at them people. That'd be great.
Okay, I will send my report shortly.
Yeah.
All right, you take care.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kat. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to that episode. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed interviewing. Please don't forget, if you want to get involved, I'm starting to put out there on social media the list of guests for that week. You are welcome to submit any questions you want to ask, and hopefully I'll read them out for you. Whether you want to do that through Instagram, direct message, you can just click, if you click on the direct message bit, there's a button there and you can record and send that right across. But there's many apps you can do, or email me, or send me a DM on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, that's cool with me. For those of you who want to support the show, please don't forget, iTunes reviews are always appreciated, and obviously I will read them out the following week for you, and I tend to use them on social media, so that's all very much appreciated. If you'd like to help contribute towards the show, then don't forget there's my Ko-fi page where you can submit anything from $1, pounds or upwards, and I'll keep a note on there what I'm trying to achieve as the months and years go by. For those who want to keep coming back to the show, don't forget you can just subscribe in your friendly podcast app of choice, and there's a weekly newsletter on my website, flogger.co.uk, so that's P-H-L-O-G-G-E-R, and you'll get an automated email from me. And that tells you each week what's gone up on the website. So it's the podcasts and any articles I've wrote. So yeah, thank you so much. And I'll see you again soon. Bye.